Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this, it's really spring and how beautiful it is, March 29th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI once again. On the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College radio community is plugged in. Well, today we'll conclude our phenomenal Black Women series, and we're going to have Barbara Arnwine joining us very shortly, and she is the president and founder of the Transformative Justice Coalition, and I declare the undisputed champion of voter protection for Black people and people in general in these United States of America. We're going to be talking about Black women voters and the Black freedom struggle, but inevitably we'll turn the discussion also to what's happening with voter suppression, particularly with the reemergence of Jim Crow, big time, on steroids in Georgia. I just want to quickly say, as I always do, be careful with COVID. I am worried. I'm worried just like I think it's Michelle Walensky. She broke down in tears because she just has been begging us to please be disciplined, please be careful, because there is the possibility of a fourth wave, another surge because of the reckless behavior of people who just want to just get rid of it. But the only way to get rid of it is for us to really get rid of it. And that means to mask up, social distance, wash our hands, and get a vaccination. Got to get up to that herd immunity, somewhere around 80%, 85% of the population who will take the vaccination. I'm 7 days in, took my vaccination, announced it last week at my church, St. Mark's AME. They had a pop-in center, which is good. Just heard President Biden talking about having a center within 5 miles. Well, you know, 5 miles is still a long distance, frankly, but we'll take it. But these pop-up centers are better, increasing the number of COVID locations, pharmacies, from something like 17,000 to 40,000 across the country, in order to try to get this done. So let's stay the course. Let's stay the course. Encourage your friends, your family, young people. You know, a lot of young people are getting this new variant, and it is damaging. It is more deadly. But even if you recover, there are far too many people who are sustaining permanent damage because of having contracted COVID. That's something we don't talk about a great deal. I think they're calling the long haulers, or some terminology is being used. It is frightening the degree of damage that this vaccine is, is actually afflicting. So we really, really, really need to be cautious and careful. And that brings us to the Community Cares Listening Line, the Black Family Summit of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. As you well know, in partnership or with the support of WBI, has a Community Cares Listening Line. A Community Cares Listening Line which provides culturally appropriate listening. That is to say, community cares. That just resonates, right? We care. And we're here to listen with people who are there. Culturally appropriate means they're coming from, you know, they're people of African descent from different backgrounds, you know, who can call in, and I mean, anybody can call in, but clearly we're, you know, culturally appropriate means just that. There are times when you want people with certain languages, certain backgrounds to be able to listen to you. But not only listen, we're in a position to also make a referral to a culturally appropriate psychiatrist, psychologist, social worker. If it's about suicidal thoughts or domestic violence, any of those kinds of concerns, or schools, what to do about schools, we have a Community Cares Listening Line. The number is 877-827-6677. Let me say it again, 877-827-6677. Call that line in order to listen, to have someone listen to you. And if you're anxious, Don't hesitate. By the way, anonymous and confidential. And again, I renew your membership. You just heard the appeal. In order to be able to vote and participate fully in the democratic processes and to ensure the stability and the integrity of WBAI, $25 a month is to renew your membership. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. End of the program, we'll open it up. The professor on the soapbox, which means we're going to be listening to you. And we're going to be asking the questions, do black voters matter? And what kind of immigration policy would you prescribe? Big crisis on the border. We've got to figure out how to fix it. We're now delighted to have join us our phenomenal black woman for the final guests of the month, none other than attorney Barbara Arnwine. Again, she is the founder, president and founder of the Transformative Justice Coalition. And as I said before, she is the undisputed champion of voter protection for black America and all people who believe in democracy in this country. Barbara Arnwine, attorney Arnwine, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Well, it's a pleasure. Hi, Dr. Daniels, and thank you so much for having me on your show today.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have it. It's my pleasure because, as I said before, you really get the job done. We want to dive right in. First and foremost, you know, when we put, and I just must say that when we set the show up, we weren't aware that we were going to have this new appearance of Jim Crow on steroids in Georgia. But before we get off into that, let's just give a quick little bit about your background, because you are, as I said before, you are on the case. You have a mission, and I must say you've done many, many things, but you have certainly been on the mission of stopping voter suppression and being a champion for opening up the process to make sure that everybody can vote in these United States of America. So give us a little bit about what influenced you to become such an avid human rights activist and advocate.
Well, I was, you know, inspired. I was born as a protest baby. My mom had me at an all-white segregated hospital. She waited until she was about to give birth before calling for any cab or anybody else to come take her. And they had to take her to the nearest hospital, which happened to be the white hospital that she was told not to go to. And when she got there, because she was so advanced, they had no option. They tried to push me back in, back in her service, and that wouldn't work. And they had to take her, and they had to actually deliver me. I was the first black baby born at Seaside Hospital at that time in Long Beach, California. And that's just, you know, the story of my birth. And because I was born there, they had to do my well baby service there. So I kind of opened the doors for African-American children to be treated and to be born at that hospital. So I was born as a protest baby, and I guess I got it in my spirit because by the time I was 16 and 17, I was active. Right. You know, I was out there being part of the black student movement. And when I went to declare my colleges, got really involved in, you know, the black student movement and found at that point a little bit more about the women's movement. And started really tracking issues that pertain to women. And I knew there was this bizarre disconnection between black women and white women and that our stories weren't identical. And at that time, nobody was talking about, you know, intersectionality and combined discrimination, but I kind of knew something was up. And, and so I, you know, was very interested in that side. And then, of course, you know, I went to, you know, I finished declaring my colleges and went to Duke for law school and came out of law school determined to use the knowledge of the law to fight, you know, racial discrimination, to advance, you know, societal change. And that was, you know, my commitment. It was a good one in the sense that I was able to work for North Carolina Legal Services for a number of years. In fact, I stayed in North Carolina for a total of 10 years. And I then went to the Boston. Well, I worked for legal services and, you know, rose through the ranks up into the management. Then I went to Boston, became the head of the Boston Lawyers Committee, came to Washington, D.C., 10 years, less than 10 years later, to head up the National Lawyers Committee. And now in 2015, I left, and now I head up the Transformative Justice Coalition.
Right. Well, what a phenomenal story. Yep, a phenomenal story for a phenomenal Black woman. And you struck right on the intersectionality I wanted to talk about. Because would you talk to our audience about the role of Black women in the women's suffrage movement? Because very often people just think that somehow this was just a movement for white women, even though Black people historically played a role, even if sometimes they were not welcome to play a role. But our Black women and Black sisters have been there, right?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, sadly, it's one of the deficits of the, you know, series that Skip Gates has been doing, is that they fail to really portray well the role of Black women suffragettes. Let me just make it very clear, people, that right after slavery was ended, African-American women had already started, but they really accelerated what was known as the Black Women's Club movement, that would eventually become all these organizations that you know of, like the National Council of Negro Women, et cetera. Even the Urban League, most people don't realize it, but the Urban League started off in part as a Black women's club.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. They combined with another organization to become the Urban League. The National Urban League owes its existence. People don't know that in 18, during that whole period, it was Black women who were really behind, Black men suffragettes, suffrage. The 15th Amendment, of course, was only for men. And Black women were immediately saying, what about us? And they were immediately trying to get the right to vote for Black women, for all women. And it was in 1895. If people look it up, they'll see that there was actually the first national convention of colored women, which was Black women, that was held in Boston in 1895. And subsequently, almost every year, there would be a subsequent convention of Black women leaders. In fact, most people don't know, Ron, that the keynote speaker in 1895 was Harriet Tubman.
Wow.
And I haven't been able to find, anything that recorded her speech, but she gave the keynote, according to the records. And she was, so that is a whole different story about what I call the Harriet Tubman people think they know, the Harriet Tubman who really existed. There are so many great stories about her, and we got her pigeonholed and boxed up, and we don't see her full amazing, amazing myriad of accomplishments. So people don't know that the Black Women's Club movement drove African-American progress, underscored all our church building, underscored all the institution building of the Black colleges that we call historically Black colleges and universities, HBCUs, that it was the Black Women's Club movement that was essential to all of that development all the way through, very heavily through the 1950s, 1960s. People don't know that. So when we got to 1900s and there was a whole push for women's suffrage, it was Black women from those club movements, over 14,000 of them at the time that were marching, engaged, actively pushing, actively writing major columns in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, all over the country, while Black women down south were writing really heavily about the need for the women's vote, but their white women counterparts, a lot of them were just stone white supremacists, and they didn't want Black women to be associated with their movement. And in fact, they told Ida B. Wells and other Black women that they had to march at the back of all their major marches. And Ida B. Wells refused, and came up and marched hand in arm with the Illinois delegation. So, you know, people and refused to be pushed to the back. So because of the internal racism within the women's movement that still haunts the movement in part, you know, as it, you know, tries to overcome the past and set itself on a different correction course. So I just think that it's so important for people to realize that even when the 19th Amendment was enacted, Black women who had done so much to make sure it was enacted were the very women who were denied. And right. There are petitions after petitions that people should read of Black women to the National Association of Women and other groups demanding that they stand up for Black women and make sure that the Black women and the Latino women and the Asian women who fought so hard in that movement are given the right to vote. And as we all know, tragically, that right to vote would not be secured until 1965 with the passage of the Voting Rights Act, for which Black women played a huge role in making sure that happened.
Right. Well, that brings us to the present, really, because, you know, in the last few years, we really have been hearing about Black women voters taking the lead. And this is not to put down the brothers and that the brothers haven't been voting, but clearly Black women have come to the forefront. So talk to us about the role that Black women played, not only in 2018, but particularly in this last election. It just looked like the sisters took over, said, we are going to get this done, mobilizing all across the country. And in particular, Georgia, where nobody really believed that, you know, this red state could be flipped. And I know you were all over this and many other women were working on this. So talk about the enormity and significance of Black women voters and organizers and putting together really saving democracy in 2020.
You know, it's fascinating, Ron. Black women voters are the best kept secret in America because most people don't realize there's no Bill Clinton without Black women. You know, it's Black women in 1992 who and Black voters who really, you know, pushed the margin of victory for Bill Clinton in many southern, you know, states and jurisdictions. I mean, that's just unknown. It's part of that, you know, unspoken history. But I knew it because I tracked these numbers. And so Black women have been leading the vote effort. Partly it's part of our heritage, right? Because we were so active for so many years. And, you know, we had people like, Madeline, you know, Walker and others who, you know, did so much work, Lena Walker and so many others who did all this work over the years. And probably that just, you know, became part of our internal tradition. But in any event, Black women in 2016, Black women in 2012, I should say, were determinative, 2008, 2012. And a lot of folks said, we got to stop that. So in 2011, what I call the modern era of voter suppression started taking shape. And we started seeing, you know, the first wave of all of this voter suppression legislation that was entered into, states. You know, people don't understand these strict voter ID laws. None of that stuff existed before 2009. None of it. Their grandparents, right. Their parents all voted without these restrictions. But they got upset because they start seeing what I call the new emerging American majority, which is, in fact, you know, people of color, progressive whites, students, single women. I mean, all of these are the basis for a dominant electorate for decades to come. And they're saying instead of allowing the demographics and people's, orientation towards what they see as a good politic to dominate, they want to make this a democracy for some, not for all, a democracy for some, and not even a democracy, whatever it takes to govern and to maintain white dominance. So that's why you're seeing Georgia, because in 2016, the Black vote was depressed. I mean, the voter suppression that was existent at that point actually switched over Wisconsin, switched over some other states and gave Trump his victory. And people just don't really didn't know that. Actually, in 2016, African-American vote counts went down by over anywhere from a million to 2 million less votes counted. And I'm just talking about votes counted. I'm not talking about turnout. It's a very different right. scenario. So in 2020, we said we're going to get out in the streets. We're going to do serious organizing. We're going to teach people how to overcome every barrier that exists. And then came COVID, and we said we're going to still do the work. We're going to still teach people. We're going to still. So that's when we start doing voter case. That's when we start doing intense virtual trainings. That's when we started creating a whole different way of organizing. And Georgia was the culmination of that. And in the Senate runoff elections, as you know, I was on the ground for 2 months straight.
Right.
November, December, January, getting this work done and going into communities, Ron, where in the southern, what people don't know is that there are whole counties in southern Georgia, especially on the Alabama-Florida border, where they blacklist, that's what they call it, blacklist, I call it whitelist, blacks who vote,
right.
who they think vote progressively. They absolutely refuse to employ them. So a lot of people in that area have to go to Florida. They have to work in Alabama. They have to work, out, around Macon and Atlanta because they're not employed, allowed to be employed in their own districts. But guess what? Black folks in those districts gave the margin of victory to Warnock and Ossoff because they came out despite all of that.
That's
and
right.
That's the work that we were doing to make sure they could do that kind of turnout. So it's an amazing story. Black women were at the forefront. You don't even have to talk about a Helen Butler. You don't even have to talk about a Latasha Brown, honey, and Insay Ossoff. Tamika, all of these, Atkins, all of these amazing women who were out in the trenches, out in those communities where they killed, black people in the past for voting. These were our leaders, and I was happy to work hand in glove, shoulder to shoulder with these amazing women.
Wonderful, wonderful. And by the way, I'm glad that you mentioned that because we certainly love our sister Stacey Abrams, but you know how it is. The media tends to pick out one person and accredit everything to that one person. And certainly, she had played an amazing role. I mean, no question about it, built an amazing organization. But there were a lot of other people who were under the ground working with her and working with each other. And you name some of the names of people who were just really getting this done. This brings us, Barbara, to kind of an update. Before we talk specifically about Georgia, I mean, this thing has taken off. And you've been tracking it for years. But we've never seen anything like this. I mean, I'm hearing hundreds of proposals all across the country. Talk to us about what's going on with this massive voter suppression move that's being made all across the country.
Take your pens and or type on whatever your instrument is. Type down two numbers, 43 states. Type in 253 bills. That's what we're looking at across the country. Over 43 states have over 253 voter suppression measures that are either pending or have passed. Let's be very clear. Weeks ago, at least 2 to 3 weeks ago, Iowa passed 10 vicious voter suppression bills. Missouri has been passing all kinds of restrictions left and right. South Carolina has ugly bills pending right now that are almost like twins of Georgia. Florida has some horrible DeSantis authored legislation. And Texas, they have the worst. They think they're worse than Georgia. Their bill is really vicious. Arkansas has bills. Arizona alone has 100 voter suppression. You go to Minnesota. You go to Michigan. They just entered a whole plethora of ugly voter suppression bills in Michigan last week. You go around the country, and it is just one major assault. Because what's happening is that they're basically looking at people of color. They're saying that we, a lot of this is GOP-led. I'm just talking facts, folks. I'm not being partisan. That's who's leading all the voter suppression. You cannot find, this on the other side. But this is because instead of saying we'll change our policies and make them more amenable to people of color, they're saying the heck with it. We're just going to block you from voting. We're going to stop you from voting. And we're so vicious that we're going to take over local boards of elections. That's what they voted in. That's what they just passed in Georgia. They're going to take over local boards of elections because they've been trying to take over Atlanta, Fulton County's election board for years because they don't like the way blacks vote. And remember that in 2021, 93% of all registered blacks in Fulton County voted. Did you hear me? 93%.
Wow.
Unheard of numbers. And they're like, we did not mean for democracy to really apply to these black folks. So we're going to, and to these Latino folks, and to these young white students who are voting progressively. But also remember that in Georgia, 40% of the electorate who voted in November, 40% of that electorate were young people. And they were heavily people of color. So, we got so much going on. But they're looking at Georgia and saying, okay, this is the way we keep our power. Remember that Governor Kemp in Georgia got to office, became governor by suppressing the black vote. And, and the media was going crazy about him because he was resisting, Trump's calls to find more votes. But that didn't mean that this man's not a voter suppressor.
That's right.
Just a difference of opinion and a difference over territory and a difference over credit and people's future ambitions to run for office and all kinds of stuff. It had nothing to do with his being opposed to voter suppression. And, of course, the minute the election was over, he supported every form of voter suppression that was being proposed. And we say that we're not going to sit back and let them get away with it.
Barbara, talk to us about, I have this sort of unscientific anecdotal thing, given a racist society, that if white folks don't want you to do something, it's for a reason. What I mean? And I say that because you're a radio talk show host. You have Igniting Change is your, I think is the name of your radio show, which is powerful.
Yeah.
And a lot of us who do these shows, we have to encounter people who just don't believe that voting matters. Oh, it doesn't matter. I mean, we don't want to hear anything about no voting, but black votes don't matter. Well, I mean, something's going on here. If all these white folks are trying to stop us from voting, there has to be a reason. So, I mean, would you just take a minute and talk about why, I mean, connect the voting to the policy questions? I mean, black folks, they're blocking voting because they're trying to block policy.
Well, they're trying to block a whole lot of things, right? Let's talk about a couple things. You've seen Lindsey Graham on TV recently crying his heart out. What's he crying about? He's mad because in the COVID relief bill,
right,
they gave $5 billion to that legislation to help black farmers. Some people were saying it was, reparatory, that it was, a form of reparations. I don't think it's good enough to be called reparations, but it went to the whole notion that black farmers have been discriminated against so viciously by the USDA and others that it has led to, the tremendous loss of black land throughout the South and throughout this nation, and that black farmers have been, really persecuted. So we had to do everything that we could to make sure that that's policy, folks. The only reason why that whole bill was created, the only reason why there's $4 billion right now of debt relief for black farmers, the only reason why there's another billion that can be used for people who want to, you know, build farms, to want to, you know, reclaim land, take care of those heirs property problems, etc., that's because Warnock
was
elected and joined Cory Booker and pushed it through into the legislation. It matters, people. You know, if you don't think it matters, somebody on the show yesterday said, well, you know, I think it's a question of, you know, jobs. You know, I don't care about the vote. I care about jobs. I said, what makes you think they're different? They're the same thing. The decision where you allow plants to be placed. The decision of, you're talking about infrastructural development. That's going to be millions of jobs. Who's going to get them? Where are they going to be placed? What they're going to make sure that black people are employed. All of that goes to the vote. You know, if you're not thinking broadly and thinking about the way a democracy and the way this country operates, then you're missing it. That's why they're fighting us tooth and nail. That's why they don't want us to have a vote, because they don't want us to be saying reparations. Look at what happened in Evanston. They finally got the right city council, and they are giving checks right now to black families of, you know, $20,000 plus, you know, to make up for some of the racial discrimination in the past. I think people need to understand that everything, you know, the future, should college be free? The issues of, you know, so many of our people dying because they can't have access to good health care, and they're in states that refuse to even allow for Medicaid expansion. And we are dying in large numbers because of that. That's why it matters who you vote for. It matters who, in fact, is sitting in these positions. Don't be told otherwise. That's just part of the game of keeping us, you know, disabled to, you know, be able to fully exercise our, you know, the power of our vote. It's not just the vote. It's the power of the vote, because it's not just when you go and vote on election day. It's what you do afterwards. How do you hold those elected officials' feet to the fire?
Right. Barbara, we just got about a minute or so left, and two things I wanted to get out. I can remember under the Obama administration, those photos of you and other advocates standing with the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, as he was, you know, working with the coalition on the question of the census, but also on overcoming those sections of the Voting Rights Act that had been gutted. There was clearly a determination to get this done. Now, I know the Biden administration has moved forward and done, is getting good grades on the coronavirus relief package and so forth. They're saying infrastructure is next. But this voting piece, a lot of people are saying, whoa, and I think Reverend Warnock said we can walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. And the question is, does Biden have our back on this one, on the voting rights stuff? Does he have our back?
I believe that he does. And what I want people to know is that you have to put your back into this game. And how do you do it? You're saying, hey, I'm not in Georgia, and I'm not in one of those other states yet. You may be in one of those states, you just don't know. But I want people to know that on May 8th, we're going to have a national mobilization. We're asking people in 100 cities to come out, and we're going to do, you know, massive public education, massive public activation to demand the passage of what's called Senate Bill 1, the For the People Act, which would basically make most of what Georgia did null and void. We're also calling for H.R. 4, which would have prohibited Georgia from even passing and trying to enact any of that stupid legislation they passed last week, because it's also racially discriminatory. So we want you to get active May 8th. You know, if you want to know more about it, you know, you can go to Transformative Justice Coalition's Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at Barb73. You can also go to our page on Twitter at TJC_DC. We got a lot of, we need people in all 100 cities, including New York, including, you know, Newark, everywhere. Turn up, turn out, do this thing. Be heard. This is not the moment to be silent. This is the moment to fight. This is the moment to be there in this battle. And we can win it by using our political strength. We can defeat this voter suppression. This is not something where there's no answer. There is an answer. The answer is you.
Right. And so, Barbara, would you please kindly just go back? This is our organizer hat on now, just to go back through those contact informations again so that people know how to reach the Transformative Justice Coalition.
Yes, Transformative Justice Coalition. You can find our Facebook site that has all the information on May 8th at Transformative Justice Coalition. Just put it into your search bar on Facebook. At Twitter, you can find us under Transformative Justice Coalition. It's going to say at TJC_DC. You can also follow my personal page, which is at Barbs73. That's BARBS73. But also, we have a major site called VotingRightsAlliance.org. And while I was on this call, they've been calling me because we're updating that site and we're putting a lot of good information. You can also follow us at our major page, which is TJCoalition.org. I can't wait, Ron. It's time. And I know that we have people out there who are listening to your show who are ready. They don't want to take this. They're already calling me right and left saying, why aren't we boycotting all these corporations? Why aren't we doing other things? People are ready to go.
And ready for the revolution.
Kwame Ture. They're ready.
All right. Barbara Arnwine, phenomenal Black woman, the undisputed champion of voter protection for Black people and people of color and democracy in general. We really appreciate the work that you do, and we appreciate you spending time with us on Vantage Point this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that was Barbara Arnwine, and you can see her energy and her passion. She is a bad sister. She's a phenomenal Black woman. I've known her for years, and she is indefatigable. She is tireless. She is on the case, passionate about what she believes, and she will fight, fight, fight. And she declares that Black voters matter, but maybe not. We want to ask our listening audience what their opinion is on this question. We now will turn to our voting, our listening audience on two questions. Number one, and you can call us at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Really two questions. Do Black voters matter? I'd like to have people call and to just offer your opinion on however you see that question in your head, and what does it mean to you, if anything? 212-209-2877. The other is, there is a, whether the Biden administration wants to call it or not, they're calling it a challenge. It is a crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis on the border. Literally thousands and thousands of people are headed this way. And the issue is, what should be done? What kind of immigration policy do you believe ought to be implemented in these United States of America? What's your opinion? You're the policymaker. What would you do? How would you shape a immigration policy to cope with, address, however you see it, with this crisis on the border? 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Do Black voters matter? Your opinion of that, and however you see it, to express yourself on it. And immigration policy. Be interested in just hearing how people see this question of immigration policy. It's been there for years. It's not going away anytime soon. Why do we have such a crisis in the first place? Is there anything that can be done about it that's reasonable, or at least from your perspective? It's a bit complicated in some people's heads, and we'd like to get your view on it. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. You can get open lines, which means you can get in immediately if you call right now. In the meantime, just wanted to remind you also about renewing your membership as a member of WBAI. That's $25 a month. That's a sustaining member. And you can do that by calling 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602 in order to become a or renew your membership or to sign up to become a member. $25 a month. That's what we want to encourage you to do, because that gives you the right to participate. Your vote will matter, that's for sure, in terms of determining what kind of progress and the direction of the station locally, but also in terms of the national. There are all kind of, you know, reports about changes that people want to make, and which might in fact threaten the ability of WBAI to function effectively as well as others. So, you know, we want to just have you be aware of becoming a member, and you can do that by calling 516-620-3602, or you can go to give to WBAI.org. Well, we do hope you enjoy the information shared by the phenomenal Black woman, Barbara Arnwine, as she talked about the history of women's suffrage, Black women playing a role from the very beginning, right in the colonial period, right into after emancipation, with these women's clubs, some of which I had not heard about. I had not heard about the role that Black women played, for example, in the formation of the National Urban League, and how the women's clubs just behind the scenes, unfortunately, and I say because unfortunately, because of chauvinism and sexism, even in the Black community, that's right, you know, Black women were just sort of like in the background, you know, just in the background doing the work while the Black men were getting the credit. Now that has changed dramatically, because Black women have said, we ain't taking that no more. We're not going down that route. But again, to just talk about that and the role that is being played now, Black women, and the way Black women played a decisive role. She just outlined it and right down to the current crisis. And again, talking about why Black, in her opinion, why Black voters matter. Black votes in Georgia really helped to save this. Actually, now people say maybe it was not a good endeavor, but it saved democracy. It saved the country. And it looks like now we have a situation of voter suppression on steroids. She said there are 43 states with 253 bills trying to block Black folk from voting. Now I say that if folks try to do that, they're doing it for a reason. So you can give us a call and give your opinion on that and our immigration policy at 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to talk about... Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on there.
Yes, I'd like to talk about immigration.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I believe that the situation on the border with immigration is a difficult one, especially taking the last administration used a hard iron hand to actually deal with it. And I think that the last administration got bad press for much of what it was that they were doing as far as the children were concerned. I used to work with the United States Postal Service, and I will tell you that many of the South Americans that basically came for their passports basically came for their children. And their children had passports. They had to renew them. And South Americans who were doing their passports for the first time, if their identification wasn't proper, believe me, they were capable of going down to the embassy and getting proper identification right away. So my idea, my conclusion from that was that South American countries want their citizens to come up here and work in America because this way they can make a, if they work hard, they can make a good penny. And then, you know, they can transfer that money back down to their home country. So that's what I believe that's what the big motivation is for people from South America to come to America, because there's the possibility of making money, especially for their families, and they can transfer that money back, and they get the support from their South American countries for whatever it is that they need in order to become legitimate to get across the border. They get the support from their government. So I think that it's going to be very difficult right now for the current administration because, you know, these people are coming for those reasons, and they have to use a soft hand as opposed to using the hard hand. And then, you know, it's very difficult to say what is actually going on the border because President Biden said when the media says that the children are being taken care of, and then President Biden says that when they talk about describing children, they're actually talking about teenagers, and they're not really talking about little children being put in cages and things like that. They're talking about teenagers. So I think that the mainstream media, you know, does a lot as far as misdirecting and misguiding and misinforming the public, you know, regarding what's actually going on the border. But I think that, you know, like the people that are coming across, they have the full support of their government for them to come to America.
So are you in favor of those persons being admitted or not?
Well, I will tell you, I'm in favor and I'm not in favor because I see the game. I see the game that's actually going on with it.
Well, let me just say this. I heard you lay that out, and we appreciate your perspective. But overwhelmingly, there are lawyers, and I'm privileged to have worked with lawyers over the years, given my former capacity as the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights and Immigration Reform was one of the things that we dealt with. And overwhelmingly, the people coming across the border, particularly these unaccompanied minors, but even those families, by the way, and those families are being turned back. If there is a family coming in, they're being turned back. It's the unaccompanied minors, and now they may be sent across, but these unaccompanied minors are the ones that's being admitted. But when you hear the stories, you don't really hear stories about people. I mean, yeah, they're coming, they're looking for a better life, but in many instances, there's been hurricanes. The drug cartels, the people's lives have been threatened. I mean, it's a different story than just, you know, this there's this really come to America. Now, when they get here, it's true that many people do their remittances. They will send it back to help their families and whatnot. They're not necessarily trying to help these governments. Some of these governments are corrupt. They're corrupt governments in many instances. And unfortunately, some of these corrupt governments have also been supported by the United States of America over the years. Look, my friend, appreciate your perspective. Want to get a couple more callers in. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
How are you, sir?
Doing fine.
Our government has done this to us. They go over to these other countries and they put in puppets. They start a lot of problems. They allow things to fester. And then they come this way. And who always suffers in this country? Black and brown people. Because when I was growing up, short order cooks were black. Most of these construction workers, the laborers, black. Carpenters, black. Go there now. I can go to New York City right now. And most of those guys, that's why you see them on the news so much. Because the earth caved in on them or the lanyard isn't working and they're swinging from a building. Because they hire these immigrants that are here illegally, and they don't know the rules, and they don't care because they're happy to get the job, and they do all these little things. But meanwhile, who's not working? Black and brown people. Who's not in those diners anymore? cooking like I was growing up watching them. You don't see black men short order cooks anymore. How many black men is in New York City right now working at these high-wage construction jobs? Very few. And that is the problem. So, no, I don't want the immigration. I don't want the illegal immigration. And it's the reason that so many people voted for Trump. And if Biden continues on this bull, Trump will be back in there again just off of this one issue.
Hmm. All right. Well, at least you spoke it plain and laid out your position. Let's see if we have others who are lined. We can take maybe one more call, maybe two if we get a quick response. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. I really, really wanted to hear people's perspectives on this because it is a complicated question. It's not an easy question. The first part of what the last caller spoke about is something that I also mentioned, and that is this problem in part was in large measure because of the behavior of governments, the U.S. government, moving in various difficult ways. Can we squeeze in one more for a minute? Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
How are you? You have about a minute because I've got to close out at a hard close, but we want to get your opinion in.
Well, it started off okay where he says how the U.S. goes around on Puerto Rican, goes to different countries, exploits them, and then says, pick yourself up by the bootstraps. And for him to say that the previous caller, he has to look at, yes, like I see Puerto Rican restaurants and then they turn into Dominican restaurants. Sure, the people that come that are doctors in their country come over here and they have to be laborers or, you know, do the menial jobs. This is a natural way that it happens. You know, I'm saying natural, but, you know, we've moved on to different positions as well. He has to look at that. And it all begins with impoverishing ourselves. Last night, and where's the compassion? You know, like Dr. Henry Clark, is it, I believe, said the Indians are us. In other words, right. We are the ones that, you know, they say, oh, pick yourself up. But we have done that. And we have, you know, we have to educate ourselves in history. You know, right. Last night they gave Women's History about Ida B. Wells, I believe her name is, how they burned her, you know, and she just kept forging and forging. We have to give each other more credit and more,
right.
You know, more support. I mean,
right.
We're the first ones to turn our own selves in. It's ridiculous. And by the way, Biden, he can enact a federal rule. And he needs to be more gangster. Like, let's stop playing nice. As far as voting, it's everybody's right. This is ridiculous right. That we're even going through this.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. We've run out of time. But let me just also say, when he talked about people coming here, they are exploited. They are exploited ruthlessly. These people are exploited. They're in limbo. That's why you need immigration reform that can correct these different issues. Anyway, great discussion. Ended our Phenomenal Black Woman series. We got some big programming coming up in the weeks ahead. Don't forget to become a renew your WBAI membership. You can do that by, again, calling 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. This is the professor. We'll see you again next week. We have the WBAI WPFW news coming up next.